Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three top questions that international admissions offices are asking themselves this week. Each week on the Roundup, we take three news stories or a conglomerate of news ideas around a central theme related to international education. We feature a series of news articles in our newsletter that comes out Monday called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And I'll be putting the link to the newsletter as well as various articles that we're covering today in the comments section on the Facebook page. So please be sure to check those out for more details on what we're talking about as we proceed. And I want to give a special shout out to those that are listening on podcast. You've really helped grow the Roundup in terms of its interest in the international ed community. Very happy to say that our trajectory is only going up on the Roundup on the podcast feed. So thank you very much for being a part of that discussion. So today we're going to be covering three questions that I think will be very enlightening for all involved in terms of the impact they're having on our profession. First up is, will the GOP support of OPT and the visa process help? For those of you who aren't aware, last week, 21 GOP members of Congress sent a joint letter to Secretary Pompeo from State and Acting Secretary Wolf from Homeland Security, asking them for two main issues to be kept in mind in the coming months. First up, the preservation of OPT. We've all in the field have been waiting for the other shoe to drop from the president related to practical training. There's been talk of changes to OPT over the last couple of years anyway. And as we know, with the pandemic, a lot has been added or accelerated into what is being considered by the administration as necessary, closing borders obviously for health reasons, but longer term things in the guise of taking away jobs from Americans. OPT fits into that category in the eyes of the president and some of his key supporters, but the realities are very different in terms of that on the OPT piece. And if you've read the letter, I certainly encourage you to do that. It's an open letter to Secretary Wolf and Secretary Pompeo, and really lays out, related to OPT, the value of that. And I think the letter is written in a way that certainly shows that this OPT is an important piece of the post-study work puzzle that international students consider when they're making decisions on where to attend, which country to attend. And as I've told all my clients on the university side for months on end, the most important factor you need to realize as you're setting out your institution's plan for international education, international student enrollment, is to realize that we're in a globally competitive environment, and one in which changes to policies and on the governmental level can have huge ramifications for institutions. And one of those, probably the most important, aside from visas, is work experience after graduation. The British have reinstated post-study work, a two-year post-study work that had been canceled since 2012. Australia has beefed up theirs. New Zealand has as well. Canada has a very streamlined process for study to work. And that's something that we are lacking. And certainly, in terms of a streamlined process, we have the opportunity to work, but that can be taken away at a moment's notice by this administration. And so, thankfully, GOP members of Congress have rallied to support this cause, to direct Secretary Pompeo and Wolf to protect OPT. This is more, that piece of OPT is more directed to Secretary Wolf, because his operations at Homeland Security have oversight over implementing OPT policy. They also make the pitch in the letter about the expansion of the economic impact of international students that they have on the economy, $41 billion over the last year, and that's direct and indirect revenue coming from jobs that are created tuition that is paid, housing and spending that these international students do. So NAFSA and U.S. Commercial Service have been very involved in putting together these reports every year detailing the economic impact of these students in our country. And I've certainly seen in this letter, the language that they're using is certainly one that's probably written by international educators, and that there's some great content in there in the letter, and certainly would be exactly the kinds of things that I say. And they make the point, particularly as a more time-sensitive issue on visas, on the visa process right now, given the impact that we're seeing on closed embassies and consulates worldwide, students not being able to get visa appointments till October, November in some of the key markets in China, India. So their focus on the Congresspeople's focus on this as a major issue for this coming fall is certainly one that has been, we've seen other signs of this. We saw referenced a letter from the president of University of Notre Dame, Father Jenkins, last week. His letter to Secretary of State Pompeo about the visa process to make sure that his students that they've admitted from overseas have a chance to get to campus in mid-August this year instead of the end of August. So these are very serious issues that we hope administration considers. Certainly Secretary Pompeo has direct oversight over the embassies and consulates in terms of visa processing. There's talk even in the letter, and which is referenced in a Forbes article that I'll also include the link to, that to expedite visas, perhaps waiving in-person interviews, which has been a requirement for the last few years, that there be an in-person interview for all visa student visa applicants. So encouraging certainly to see this, and particularly here in Ohio, Steve Stivers, a member of Congress from Ohio, is the author of the letter, and initially got and then was able to get many of his colleagues to sign on to it. So kudos to them for their efforts, and I hope that doesn't fall on deaf ears with the administration, because it's certainly those two pieces, OPT and the visa process, are essential to make sure that U.S. maintains its position as the dominant player in the world market. Now, what I also would like to do today is, as we shift gears to the second question, which is taking a look at what we're talking about here with international students and the impact of COVID-19 that it's having. It's been a tidal wave, a tsunami, if you will, in terms of what the impact on our field of study. And over the last couple of weeks, I've read posts from a lot of colleagues in the field, some that have been let go by their institutions, others that are furloughed for the summer, when decisions still need to be made as to how you're going to bring in students for the fall. So there's a lot of folks in the industry that are really, really, really struggling right now. I haven't seen this kind of disruption to our field since 9/11. And immediately after that, when CVIS was being implemented for the first time, and we saw a lot of older professionals that have been advising for a number of years say, I'm not going to be a part of this, being a policeman for the government with regard to international students. So it's one of those times again, and I certainly felt the need to put some thoughts on paper, or at least on my LinkedIn articles profile, to give a little pep talk, but also a reality check in terms of where we are with what's happening. We're talking about changes that to our industry that we've never seen before, ever. Even 9/11 days and did not rise to this level of real, I think, desperation in a lot of places. And a lot of folks that are left scrambling right now on the institutional level saying, well, we need to make decisions that make sense. We need to be able to communicate those to students and get their input, frankly, because some of them may not want to come given the circumstances of potential quarantines, potentially on a mostly online experience in terms of what they're going to be coming to for. They may be looking for options to defer or with a guarantee that in the spring they'll be able to come physically to campus, because the likelihood of them, as I've mentioned earlier, they're not going to be able to get here this fall unless they're already in the United States in valid status. And even if they do, if your campus is doing fully online, legally as a new international student, they wouldn't be able to join us based on current regulations from DHS. So there's a lot of challenges right now. But this is also the time when things are being upended all over the place in terms of process, in terms of what's available. Certainly travel this fall for international student recruitment is going to be bare minimum, if any, given various restrictions that may still be in place and travel that might or may not even be possible. So what we see right now, I think, is an opportunity for real innovation to happen. There's been a lot of talk of what that looks like over the last few weeks. Colleagues in other firms have put out their best guesses on where institutions should be moving. But I'll take the point here by looking back, and I think it's always useful to look back at when similar times, nothing's like this, but similar times of disruption and what came out of that disruption. And you certainly saw post 9/11, we saw huge shifts in ways institutions reached out to international students from moving into the Middle East in post 9/11 times was very difficult. There weren't tours. You were lucky to be able to do individual travel. You could potentially travel, but there was still some safety concerns for a good number of months and if not years. But what also happened out of that is there was a rise of the state consortia. The lion's share of state consortium for international education were born out of 9/11. And in Indiana, where I was at the time, Destination Indiana became a thriving piece of international education for our state. We did we did small group tours to East Asia. We did the first live video college fairs to reach students in particular markets in the Middle East and then elsewhere. And that was a real time of innovation, of thinking outside the box, of collaboration with partners, with other institutions that had shared goals. And I think the time is right for these kinds of things to happen again. One example of that is with Study Texas. Study Texas has had their consortium for a number of years. They've been ably supported by the U.S. Commercial Service. But they've put together the first, I think, state consortium video. New York might have done one, Maryland might have done one, but one that really is addressing the times. And it's a very useful video, and I certainly dropping the link into the comments section here. You'll certainly see what the goal is here. And with Texas, Study Texas, the theme is Texas Means Friendship. And that's a real nice way to position your state in relation for international students to understand how it's the third, right now it's the third largest destination for international students in the United States. And that they play on that. They play on the diversity aspects of Texas. They focus obviously on the friendship. But that's the kind of thing that as consortia, you get that out widely, that you incorporate that in all you do as institutions, not just collectively as Study Texas. But that's the kind of thing that can set the stage for some really important things down the road. So kudos to Study Texas and Jessica Guyver there to UT San Antonio, doing a great job in terms of rallying the troops. Hopefully that continues. I know China is, for many countries, many colleges and universities in the U.S. is a very important part of their puzzle. They're seeing a lot of downturn in the Chinese market over the last couple, 3 years, and they're looking for ways to kind of reboot that. And in light of what's happening with COVID-19, there's even more emphasis on, well, we can't give up on our largest market. We got to think differently. Hopefully you already had developed beyond a digital strategy. Hopefully you were traveling, but you know now travel's not going to be an option for the short term, maybe even medium term. So what are you going to do to reach these students? And I mentioned the last couple weeks we did a fireside chat with Sonorbis, talking through some of what my thoughts are on particularly China and what ways that institutions can use a multi-level, multi-channel approach towards recruitment there that relies on a digital-first approach, but also has components that can be built around that to support it, so that when travel is opened up again, or opportunities to do physical recruitment through partners or through alumni or partner universities or agents, whatever the case may be for your institution, you can hit the ground running and build on what you're developing internationally through China on digital platforms. And Synorbis has a great way for you to do that, and they're doing a free trial right now. So certainly encourage colleagues to at least give them a shout and see whether or not that might help you and your institution. Now, the final question of the day centers around test optional bandwagon. We cover test optional in our weekly newsletter on Mondays that comes out, all the SMI news fit to share. But we also take a look at here on the roundup, and certainly we've seen in the last 2 months just a landslide of schools moving test optional, and many of them using the current pandemic as sort of cover for we're going to do this for 2021 and maybe an extra year or two as a pilot program. But I doubt very seriously that many of the colleges that are going test optional now, aside from maybe the three Ivies that have made that decision, Cornell, and this week we featured our news articles for University of Pennsylvania and Dartmouth that have also joined the test optional bandwagon from the Ivies. So we'll see others like University of Virginia, they're doing a pilot project. We have also seen other institutions, one of which that has decided to, when it comes to test optional, they are they're going test blind. Catholic University of America in DC had been test optional for the last 5 years, is now becoming test blind for the fall 2021 intake. So international students in all the ones that we cover today, Dartmouth, Penn, Catholic U of America have all gone, and Virginia are all including international students in that test blind piece. Their policies, whether permanent or pilot project. So the real interesting article this week came from New York Times that was featured in the newsletter on Monday, that the old gray lady is finally asking the question, will the coronavirus kill admissions tests? They talked through some of the challenges SAT and ACT have. There's been a huge upswell of support to get rid of SAT and ACT. You know, as we talked about, University of California's decision to be totally SAT ACT free in 5 years, going test optional for the first two, then test blind for the last two. Then in the fifth year, they would hope to have an alternate exam. They still want an exam, but just not SAT or ACT. So we'll see what happens with that. But interesting that the Times is asking that question, will it kill the standardized testing industry? And it's one that's, some of it is leadership driven, some of it is just bad decisions that have been made through the organizations, SAT and ACT. Over the years, there's changes that is happening. The ACT chief was recently replaced, and there's now an interim. College board CEO David Coleman, who gave up his presidency on the board of College Board 2 or 3 years ago, there's now increasing pressure on him to resign. So there's a lot of shakeup happening in the testing industry anyway, and I think the coronavirus is, like for many institutions that are financially on the edge, is going to be an accelerant to their collapse. And that's something that I think we'll see more of, and we'll certainly keep our eyes on how these stories develop in the coming weeks and months. So there's a lot still to happen with what goes on in test optional before we have any real idea on the long-term future of these tests. But certainly there's enough writing on the wall, so to speak, where I think it's fair to say that the momentum is certainly moving against standardized testing, other than English proficiency. We're talking here about SAT, ACT, obviously. But there's certainly a fair amount of movement and strength behind the movement now to become test optional. So we'll see as one post in one of the Facebook groups for college admissions was who's going to be the last one jumping off the ship for standardized testing. So when you see more of the Ivy starting to do it for fall 2021, you can't imagine it's going to be too much longer before other more selective institutions also join that parade. So that's all we have for today on the roundup. I want to thank everyone for joining in live on Facebook, but also those that are watching on repeat and on YouTube, and of course those listening on the podcast. Until next week, we're going to sign off for now and look forward to seeing you all in the coming days and weeks. Cheers.